Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Accessible Technology webinar series. We're glad you're here. I'm Janet Peters. I'm a project coordinator for the Great Lakes ADA Center. The Accessible Technology webinar series is sponsored by the Great Lakes ADA Center and by the Pacific ADA Center. Both are members of the ADA National Network. The ADA National Network is comprised of 10 regional centers funded by the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research. This session is being recorded and will be available to you on the Accessible Technology webinar site, and we will hold our questions until the end of Deborah's presentation. So today's session is on social media, accessibility, and disability inclusion. Our speaker is Deborah Rue. Deborah is an advocate for the rights of persons with disabilities, and she is the founder of Rue Global Communications. The firm focuses on global disability inclusion, employment ability, ICT accessibility, and involved with the UN human rights and social media marketing. Deborah founded Tech Access in 2001 and merged it with another firm in 2011. Tech Access was an IT consulting firm that employed persons with disabilities and helped businesses create accessible technologies for people with disabilities. We're very pleased to have Deborah. She is definitely an expert in this field, and we're honored to have her speak with us today. And with that, Deborah, I will turn it over to you to begin the session.
Thank you, Janet. And thank you so much for inviting me to do this session. And I really appreciate everybody that's attending this session as well. So as Janet said, if you have any questions, you can you can type them in, and we will, if we have time, we will answer the questions at the end of the presentation. And also, I have my contact information at the end of the slide deck, and so you can always send me emails. I'm happy to answer questions. So. So today we're going to talk about social media, disability inclusion, and accessibility. So I don't want to really spend that much time. As Janet said, I am the CEO and founder of Rue Global. I also am the co-founder of Access Chat, and I'll talk about that at the end of the presentation. I do a lot of work with G3ICT, which is a UN-affiliated nonprofit that is working with countries all over the world to implement the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And I'm extremely active on social media, maybe too active. I just think it's so important for our community to really have a very vocal voice on social media so that people understand what we bring to the table. So I have written two books, one book on social media that I updated this year in 2015, and the other book, which is, it is a book about employability from an employer's perspective. What do employers need to be thinking about when they're including and retaining people with disabilities in the workforce? And that's being published by G3ICT and will be available hopefully sometime in December. So that's just, I also happen to be a mother of two grown children, and my oldest daughter was born with Down syndrome. And she, as a typical mom, I'm going to find a way to work her into my presentation. So here is a picture of my daughter, Sarah Rue, with another young lady with Down syndrome in a conference we spoke at in Egypt. So and I know some of the disability information that I'm going to provide, probably a lot of you already know this, so I apologize for speaking to the choir, but according to the World Health Organization, there's over 1 billion people in the world that have a disability, about 15% of the world population, and that's 1 in 7 people. In some countries, like the United States, 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 people identify themselves as having a disability. According to the last Census Bureau, that's about 60 million people. And 1 in 3 households are impacted by disabilities, either by, like mine, a child with a disability, and now both of my parents became disabled as they aged. My father passed away a couple of years ago, but my mom is very severely disabled now, and she acquired her disability later in life. At the age of 50, adults begin experiencing all kind of age-related changes, like hearing, vision loss, sometimes cognition and mobility problems as well. And that's coming from our AARP. People are living a lot longer for a lot of different reasons. The improvement in medical, the technology improvement, the information, the globalization, there's a lot of different reasons why people are living longer. Even though I recently heard a very troubling one about Caucasians in the United States age 45 to 54 that for the first time in a long time, they're actually dying sooner than their counterparts. So anyway, that's a whole other story, so I won't get into that. But as we age, though, more people are acquiring disabilities, which makes our market bigger and bigger and bigger. So as I already noted, the world is changing. There are a lot of different reasons why the number of people with disabilities are on the rise. I talk to countries and corporations about this a lot. I always remind them that just because you have a disability doesn't mean you're broken. Disability is just part of life. But, you know, there's a lot of reasons why more people are, living longer and actually acquiring disabilities as they live their lives. And some of them are the medical advancements, the technological advancements, and the aging of societies. Globalization is also impacting this, and in many countries, almost all countries are taking major steps to ensure the rights of persons with disabilities. Many of those countries, except the United States, have signed and ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. I'm hopeful that the United States will ratify the CRPD in the future. But it is certainly about civil rights, but it's also about the reduction of the digital divide. ICT, internet communications and technology, it's critical to our society, no matter if you're in an economically developed country or a developing country. It's very important, so we need to make sure that all technology that we use, including social media, is accessible to everybody. And then, of course, corporate social responsibility is impacting this conversation in a number of ways as well that I'll talk about as I move forward. So, seamless integration, integrating people with disabilities into society, into every aspect of society, and I think in the workforce, but also very important to think about accessibility in terms of the products and the services, the social media activities and other media activities. I don't know if y'all saw Target had an ad where they used an adorable child in the Halloween costumes that had an obvious disability. So there's a lot of wonderful things happening on media with major corporations, including people with disabilities in their marketing. We're seeing, saw some terrific Super Bowl ads coming from Comcast and Microsoft and Guinness Beer. And there's just some really, really cool ads that have come out. So we're starting to see integration, and we need it to be seamless, but there's still a lot of work to do. We are the world's largest minority group, the community of people with disabilities. We're larger and actually more loyal than the tweens and the teen groups that many marketers pursue. It is a proven fact that if you get a loyalty from a family like mine, for example, I'm a very typical American family, husband, wife, two children, dog, a cat, but I am very loyal to the corporations that actually include us. I took the time to move my business from Walgreens' competitor that I was with for over 25 years to Walgreens, because they were employing people with intellectual disabilities. And so I decided to vote with my pocketbook on that one. But I took it a step further, and I wrote a CEO to the corporation that I left telling them why. And I wrote a letter to the CEO of Walgreens telling them why I was coming. So there's still a lot of work to do to make sure our voices are heard, but that's just an example. I believe societies function better when everyone is given the opportunity to contribute to the best of their ability. And, of course, now we're really, really starting to see people with disabilities start to really find their voice on social media. So It is the social age, and it is not a trend. It is essential to your brand. And when I say, and I'm going to talk about brand during this presentation, but I'm talking about it in a way that includes either you as your own brand or as a your organization's brand, and that organization could be anything. It could be, you know, a nonprofit group, a university, a business, a small business, government. So I'm using a brand in a very holistic way. People, of course, are joining social networks for a lot of different reasons, but they're doing it to connect, to expand, to share, and hopefully to engage with each other and also to obtain all kind of information. People prefer people above brands, and what I mean by that is it's very important when you're on social media that you appear like you're a human being. We understand that brands are people, and there's somebody behind that brand, hopefully engaging with the customers, but people prefer people, so it's important that brands don't act like cold, you know, well, you follow me, and you know, so it's very important that they engage, and I'll talk more about that as well. And there's a lot of different approaches that you can make to social media. Social media is less than 10 years old, which is amazing, and we're all learning about social media and how you should do it and what it means, and Janet was kind enough to say I was an expert, and I'm very well versed on social media, but it's changing so fast that I get afraid to say that I'm an expert. I'm good at it, and I'm learning. I'm a student of social media. But it's very fluid, and it's changing so fast, and it's actually being controlled by the people, which I love about it. So it is about being human, about taking a personal identity above an institutional identity, and once again, I'll talk more about that during this presentation. So as I mentioned, social media is less than 10 years old. The first recognizable social media site was Six Degrees, and that was created in 1997. A recent Pew Social Media Research report, and it's from 2015, shows a significant increase in the proportion of U.S. adults who are using social media, but it also looks at it from a global perspective. So right now, Facebook is still the most popular social media site, but interestingly enough, it hasn't seen significant growth since they did this study in 2012. Pinterest and Instagram has seen significant growth since 2012, but some of the social media sites are leveling off as more and more of us join them. So I thought it might be interesting to include some statistics in here. So in Facebook, about 70% of people are using it daily, Instagram 59%, Twitter 38%, Pinterest 27%, and LinkedIn 22%. 72% of the adults that are using Facebook, it's up only a little bit, but it is up from 67% in 2012. It was interesting to me, I'm a total nerd about social media, but there was a 13-year-old that said that Facebook was dead and that her and her friends weren't going to use Facebook anymore because her parents were using it, and that she was only using Instagram and Twitter. And that trended all over social media, and she was actually interviewed by some of our television programs. And then she came back a few years later and said, well, okay, we are using Facebook. So social media is so interesting, and I had one of my customers say to me, well, you know, social media, you know, Twitter is, you know, it's my cat can have an account on Twitter, and she's right. There's all kind of ridiculousness that goes out on these social media platforms. There's a lot of porn, there's a lot of bad behavior, but there's a lot of really good out on social media too, and so it's very, very important, especially to our community, the community of people with disabilities, that we have a significant voice out here. So Facebook is still a very powerful medium. Pinterest was up almost 15% from 2012. And when Pinterest was first created, a lot of women were using Pinterest. They were using it, and this is, by the way, still the case, more women use Pinterest than men. I think it's about 75% women. And but they were using it for showing recipes and showing what a beautiful house looks like and gardening tips and things like that. And men were actually using it to post pictures of very attractive women. But it's really shifted and changed since then, and a lot of businesses are actively joining Pinterest now and using it in some ways. So it's similar to how a business might start using Instagram, but Pinterest is being used more by business right now than Instagram is. And I think part of it is because Instagram sort of ties your account to your phone and, sort of ties it to one person, whereas Pinterest, it's easier to access and provide information on there. And the pictures that are being provided on Pinterest can be made accessible and should be made accessible. And we'll talk more about that as well. So 28% of online adults use Instagram, and that's 15-point increase from the review that they did in 2012. So LinkedIn and Twitter updates, they both saw significant growth, but it was a little bit slower pace than what Pew saw in 2012. A quarter of online adults use LinkedIn, and that's up from 20%. And 23% of adults use Twitter, a 7-point increase from 2012. We still see with LinkedIn, many professionals and college students are using it. The demographics are very different on LinkedIn than what we're seeing on some of the other social media mediums. And the reason why I bring that up is because if you're new to social media or you're expanding your social media presence, it's good to understand who is using these different mediums so that you can decide what your plan is for using these different tools. And I'll talk about that a little bit more as well. So social media users, Facebook once again is 72% of all adults internet users, which is 62% of the entire global population. 77% of those Facebook users are women, and the age group, we have all age groups using it. 48% of the people are over 65. I remember I was in a conference, and there was a lot of people, and we were all introducing ourselves. And one young woman said, "Does anybody want to know anything about social media?" Because she could look at the room, and most of the room looked like me, the, quote, graying of America. She's like, "Just let me know." And I thought, well, no, believe it or not, some of us old guys know how to use social media too. So we can't assume anymore that social media is only for young people. Young people are very smart and clever on it, but us older guys are also adding value to social media, I think, as well. But at Twitter, once again, 23% of all internet users are using Twitter, 20% of the population, and in that you have about 30% of it is adults under 50, and 11% are adults over 50. So, and then the rest of the demographics, of course, is balanced. So LinkedIn, 25% of adult users, or 22% of the entire population, and we see in LinkedIn there are more men using LinkedIn than women. So I don't want to spend too much time on the stats. I thought it would just be interesting for y'all to get this information. And I know that, we can share this PowerPoint presentation with anybody that wants the information. And the PowerPoint is also fully accessible, because that's something that's very important to the Great Lakes ADA. So anything they put out is fully accessible. Pinterest, 31% of adult users. Internet users are using it, which is 26% of the entire population. Instagram, 28% of the adult internet users, and 24% of the entire adult population. So fascinating, the numbers. And the numbers, of course, many of these people are counted twice, because some of us, like myself, are using multiple of these. So let's get into social media. So profiles is very, very important for you to really, regardless of whether you're looking at this for your own perspective, or maybe you're helping an individual with a disability, find a job, or you are doing this for a brand, profiles are really, really critical. Profiles need to be very professional, interesting, personable to a point, and authentic. Upload good pictures. Don't use fuzzy pictures or pictures that maybe are inappropriate or could be misinterpreted. It's okay to be creative, and we really, really encourage you to be creative, but do think about professional, depending upon how you want to use your profile. I would also say, try to think, you know, long term as well, because, you know, how you use your social media when you're in high school might be different from how you're going to use it whenever you're looking for a job, and then as you move through your, you know, your life journey. So keeping it simple is always a good idea. Clear and simple headshot of you looking in the lens. I will tell you, on my Twitter, I don't do this. On my Twitter, I actually use a picture that I just love of my daughter and I in Egypt, and my daughter's up on a camel. And I do it because I love the picture, but also because that's what we do. We talk about disability inclusion and accessibility all over the world. So it's okay to do things like that, but you just really want to take some time with your profile. In your profiles, especially when you're dealing with Twitter and Facebook, use the hashtag. So some of the profiles like Instagram, and they'll just ignore the hashtag, so you don't really need it, and it'll actually take away from the characters that you can use, because most of them limit the amount of characters that you can use for your profile. But for Twitter and Facebook, hashtags are really important, and it will help people find you. So good to use them in that case. Tell people how to find you. Tell people how to find you if you're on social media. Whenever I give somebody my business card is Braille because I want, you know, everybody to be able to access my business cards. But also, I have the traditional things you would expect on the business cards, my name, my email address, my phone number. But on the back, I have all my social media handles. Now, I'm a big brander. I'm a big marketing and brander. So what I do is I've tried to make my social media handle, which is, you know, your name, consistent across all mediums. So whether you're looking for me on Pinterest or Instagram or Twitter or LinkedIn, Deborah Ruh, D-E-B-R-A-R-U-H, it's across the board. So that's a branding thing. But make sure people can find you. Put it on your website, put it out on your marketing material, put it inside your email signatures, your newsletters, your business cards, any of your advertising. Tell people how to find you. Very important. When you're dealing with social media, it's very, very important to be consistent. Budget time for social media, especially when you're first starting out in social media. We're working with a client, and they've been on social media for a few years, but they really wanted to up their game on social media. And so what we did was we came up with a strategic plan. We determined how much time we were going to budget as their vendor, and they were going to budget themselves. Because you really don't want to rely on the vendor forever and ever. You want to do this yourself. But it's all, a vendor sometimes is good to get you going. And so we budgeted time, and we determined what their goals were, what they wanted to achieve. And we used tools like Buffer. Buffer, and I have a link to it later in the presentation, but Buffer, I just happen to be a big fan of Buffer. And there's a free version of Buffer, or you can pay for different versions that gives you more capability, and I actually pay for it because we're such social media nerds. But Buffer is one of the many tools that will allow you to buffer posts on different social media platforms so that you, air quotes, appear active when you actually might be, you know, spending time with your family and off your smartphone. So sometimes people are like, "Well, Deborah, you're on it all the time." Well, I am on it a lot, but I actually buffer content so that I'm on there sometimes. It appears that I'm on there and I'm not really. There's also tools that can provide some of these same functionalities like Hootsuite. And I have a typo here. It's I've got TweetChat, and that is incorrect. It's TweetDeck. So I apologize for that typo. But Hootsuite and TweetDeck also allow you to manage multiple accounts. Say that you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, you can manage all those, or if you're like me and you're managing multiple accounts internally and for customers, you can do it that way. You can schedule posts, you can retweet and favorite and do things like that. You can also keep an eye on interactions and notifications. If somebody is retweeting for you or saying, gosh, that's a really good point that you made there, and they're engaging with you, tools like that will allow you to engage back with people, because social media is social. Social media is social. So it allows you to engage with people, and it's very important to engage. I will tell you, though, every once in a while, because I have a lot of followers. I have a lot of followers. On Twitter, I'm up to about 109,000 followers. So I have a pretty big following. So sometimes people will tweet things that I don't approve of, I don't like the content, I don't agree with. Sometimes I get tweets about President Obama or other things that I do not agree with. And so what I do is I ignore them. I don't retweet them, I don't favor them, I ignore them. If they continue, I will block them. So you have to be active and managed and engaged. And but you know, there are trolls out on
Deborah,
social media, unfortunately, as well.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Don't let that stop.
We're having problems with the phone bridge.
Yes.
So we need to stop until we can get that figured out. I apologize.
Okay, we'll just take a short break. Everybody stand up and stretch and touch your toes and wiggle around, and we'll be back shortly. Mm-hmm. And turn it over to you. Thank you, everyone. Go ahead, Deborah. Sorry for the interruption.
Oh, no problem. We definitely want people to be able to hear. So, and thanks for the people that joined while we were fixing that phone problem. So, okay, so social media, once again, is social media is social. So you want to share and you want to endorse, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But social media is about building relationships. And so if you like content that somebody shares, then give them an endorsement by, you know, giving them, it used to be a favorite on Twitter, now it's a love, but you can do a thumbs up on Facebook, you can do a like on LinkedIn, you can do a plus on Google Plus, but very easy ways to just say, I like this, and then sharing it. And the person that you liked or you loved as on Twitter or you shared, they will know that you did it because they'll get a notification that you did that. And I always really appreciate when somebody shares my information. I can't always send out a tweet to every single person that retweeted something, but I always notice, you know, who's doing what and who is sharing and endorsing, and I try to do the same thing. So social media, it's meant to be reciprocal. It's meant for us to share and share content and blogs and images and videos, and people will return the favor. I will tell you that when, as a person that really cares about disability and inclusion and accessibility, when somebody posts something that maybe isn't in the community but I think it's really good content, I will actually repost it in a way that, and I'll go in and I'll add some, you know, maybe clarification of what the video is or the information is to make it more accessible. I also have been known, even though probably you're not supposed to do this, but I don't care, I do it anyway. There have been times when I'm sharing something and maybe a newspaper, it's an article, it's the title to an article, and they're using they're using language that is not people first. I'll actually go in and update the title in my post and use people first language. When you click on it, you go into the article, of course you'll see, you know, the language that they chose to use, but I try as a way to educate people on social media to use people first language just to try to educate people. So it's okay to say it on your own post, and sometimes, for example, there was a conversation on Twitter the other day and they were talking about videos, and I said, and don't forget to caption your videos because more people, I forget the statistic, the exact statistic, but like you get 26% more views when your videos are captioned. And I don't know the exact number, I can look it up, but so I just provided that information in a very, you know, informative way so that the people that were talking about videos also remembered if you caption them, you're going to get more views. And isn't that your whole purpose of creating those videos, so that people will watch it and see it? So I use social media like that as well. So just because you endorse someone's post doesn't mean that you're endorsing that person. It's only about that particular post. So very important to share and endorse. Another thing that is very important is following people back. There was, when we first started social media, a lot of superstars and stuff and celebrities and different personality types, and corporations were doing this as well, and some of them still are. They would go out, they'd put out an account, they'd put out content, and you could follow them, but they never followed you back. Well, that really turns people off, and I decided early on that, oh, I'm going to do that. I believe in following back. Now, I will unfollow somebody if they're being extremely naughty and they're doing porn, and if I see it, I will unfollow stuff like that. But I follow about 99% of the people that follow me because I think social media is social. So it's really important to follow and follow back. And I was talking to a celebrity, and it is a celebrity with a disability, and this particular person has about 75,000 followers. And the celebrity said, you know, Deborah, I want 1 million followers. And I said, well, I noticed you're following, you've got 75,000 followers, and you're following back 600 people. I said, what's that about? Follow your fans back. Oh, well, I'm a celebrity. I said, the days of that, not following back, you know, those days are gone. You want followers, follow back. I also remember another time I followed a person in the community, and they said, Deborah, this is the third time you followed me. And I saw that, and I tweeted them back, and I said, then follow me back. Because if you don't follow me back, I use a tool, and I'll talk about it later, called Manage Glitter. I have to manage my account. And the algorithms that these social media programs have, if you can only have so many followers to follow back. I mean, followers versus following. And so if you do that, I've gotten to the point as I was growing my account, which I grew it organically, but I would get to the point where Twitter would say, you can't follow any more people because your algorithms are wrong. And so if people don't follow me back, I unfollow them. And it's not that I don't care about their content, but I really think it's important as an influencer on social media that I follow back people that follow me and vice versa. So, and there's a lot of different ways to find people to follow. You can follow your friends. You can follow customers' accounts. Follow influencers. I would love for you to follow me, and I will follow you back. And bloggers that are in your market or your niche. And follow the people that are following them as well. A lot of these networks, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, they will suggest people for you to follow. You can do some of that. You can look at keywords that interest you and follow those accounts. And unless the people are being really naughty or they're, you know, trolling you or misbehaving, consider following people back. That's how you grow your influence on social media. That's an important way. It's not the only way. Also, very important not to pitch or market. I see accounts doing that. All they do is talk about themselves, their services, their marketing, but people get really, really turned off by that. And relentless sales pitches will not be tolerated. People will not only unfollow you, they actually will block you. So instead of always, you know, bragging about yourself, brag about others. Get engaged in a conversation. You know, chatter about things that are relevant to the business that you're in. It's okay to pitch your products and services, but just don't do it all the time. A good rule of thumb is like 80-20. You know, 80% of the time you're engaged in conversation, 20% of the time you're doing a soft approach to selling, and it's okay. It's okay. I did, when Janet asked me to do this presentation, we went out on social media and we talked about this webinar. And hopefully some of y'all saw the marketing that we did out there, because we knew that this was a webinar that was actually being offered for free, which is great, because many times these webinars you have to pay for. So we wanted to make sure not only that you knew about this webinar, but by the way, they do webinars all the time that are real relevant to people with disabilities, disability inclusion, employment, accommodations. So it's good for you to know what the Great Lakes ADA is doing. So it's okay to take sort of a softer approach. And it's okay to promote your brand, but you got to balance it. It can't always be, it's always interesting to me to watch people that only talk about themselves. They don't ever retweet anybody else's stuff. They never follow back. They don't engage. They just talk about themselves, and people don't like that in social media. So it's about engaging. And you can decide how much you want to engage. You don't have to be a total social media nerd like I am. I just adore social media. So, you know, engage with people. Thank people for retweeting or favoriting or loving your stuff. Answer their questions. Ask them what they do or what they like and what did they like about the article. Engage with them by, you know, when you realize what their topic, the topics they care about, you know, share information with them. Repost, share, like content. It is all about engaging. Now, once again, with such a large following on Twitter, it's hard for me to engage with everybody. So what I do is I look at my notifications. I see people that are asking me a question, or they're retweeting or sharing my post, or they're engaging with me, and I engage back with them. I think I'm really good about engaging on social media. You do it according to how much time that you have, but there's different tips and things that you can do to help you engage better. But people like to know they're dealing with a person, you know, on the other end of the social media. And I'll give you a silly but meaningful example. I live in Virginia, and Virginia had an earthquake a couple of years ago, and it was really, and we felt it up and down the entire East Coast, and it was really frightening. And then where I lived, I was 6 miles from the epicenter. So we had all these aftershocks, and it just really frightened me at a core level. It was sort of weird. I remember waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning with an aftershock, and it just felt so eerie to me that the whole room was shaking. I'm from Florida. You know, we typically don't have earthquakes. And so I got up and I got on social media. Did anybody feel this? And I started chatting with people in my area that were also feeling this, and it made me feel safer knowing there were just other people. I didn't want to wake up my husband or my daughter and say, that was a way that I engaged in a time that I was nervous about the ground shaking so much. So engage in ways that work for you. It is really important to have an engagement strategy, you know, to make sure that, you know, your engagement is tied to your measurable business or personal objectives, that you're finding a balance with your time and the resources that you want to use. Like I mentioned, you know, Tweet Deck and Hootsuite and Buffer, which can help you with some of that balance. You sort of can determine how often you want to engage and directly, and how often you want to post others' comments and things like that. And you consider all the different things, including posting company updates and reading new information from your favorite brands. I will also say it's a lot easier for someone like me that I run my own business, I do a lot of social media marketing. It's a lot easier for me to be very nimble on social media than, say, some of my clients. I work with some really large corporations, and when they do their tweets, they actually have to go through approval through their marketing areas, and their tweets have to be approved because they're a gigantic brand. And so, you know, you have to follow the rules of your corporate or your nonprofit brand, for example. And I'll give you an example. We are going to be having Easter seals on Access Chat that I'll talk about later. And they were saying, well, the questions that you're going to ask us in the interview you're going to do, we need to get that approved before it goes live. Well, that's what happens when you're a big brand like Easter Seals. So you have to think of all these strategies and come up with an engagement strategy that works for you as for whatever reason you're on social media, whether you're on as a brand or whether you're on personally, but you're attached to another brand. And that's another thing you have to consider. if you have in your LinkedIn profile that you work for the Department of Defense, you might want to really think about what you're chattering about on your personal social media sites, because people can tie those connections back. So you really do have to have a strategy, and there's a lot of different things to consider, but the things I listed on the slide are a few of them. So branding tips, promoting others. I really believe it's important to have pure intentions and trying to help others. And I try to promote others all the time, but at the same time, it also provides me with social credibility. A lot of people in the disability community know that I'm very active, and they will come and say, hey, will you help us out by tweeting about this, or we have this crowdfunding, or we have this webinar, or this training, or we're going to do this on, International Day of Disabilities. Will you help share the content? Absolutely. It helps them, it helps the community I care so much about, and it also continues to build my credibility. So it is important to stay on topic. You can get off topic a little bit, but as you're growing your brand, if you have a business audience, for example, try to stay true and focus on the topic at least 70-80% of the time. I am known for chattering about social media inclusion, about disability inclusion and accessibility. And so pretty much that is my content about 80% of the time. But I also talk about my family. I talk about tripping over my dog, getting a black eye. I try to be a person there as well. Curate the content. There's a lot of different ways that you can curate content. You can reshare what somebody else has done. You can get content from a lot of places. I get content from Clout. I get content from Juice, which is a free tool from Paperly that delivers content right to my phone once a day. I do Google searches. I have Google deliver to my mailbox disabilities, Internet of Things, wearables, robotics, things that I know are important to the topic that I'm talking about. I'll actually get those Google alerts sent right to my phone. It is important to lose all feeling of entitlement. No one's required to listen to you or follow you, and so if somebody didn't want to follow you, that's really their business. It has nothing to do with you. You want to engage your customers or your friends by engaging in conversations and commenting on their content. It's really impressive when I see corporate brands doing that. Some brands are so good about engaging with customers, and some brands are terrible about it. If somebody takes the time to say, at Starbucks, we are very impressed that you're employing people with intellectual disabilities now in your to bag the coffee and in your manufacturing area. We're impressed with that. I said that, and Starbucks came back and said, thank you, we really value diversity in our workforce. And so people really like when a brand comes back and engages with them. And then tell stories about your successes, other successes in the community. It's a real favorite read. And the source for these branding tips comes from Marcia Collier, who is at Marcia Collier on social media. And she has really, really good information about branding tips and social media. She also follows you back. She's a really nice lady. I know her from social media very well. Anything that we do, we should think about measuring the impact. We measure what's important. So start by defining what your business and marketing objectives are, whether once again you're doing it for your brand or somebody else's brand. Define how social media can help you reach those objectives, and then measure your social media programs relentlessly. Be very consistent. All of the tools, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, they all have analytics that you can get free access to. You can also use tools like Buffer gives you some analytics. So does Hootsuite and TweetDeck. I use a tool, because we do this so much, called Nuvi, N-U-V-I. And I have a bit more information about some of these tools later in the presentation. But you want to make sure that the efforts that you're making is actually moving the needle for your business or your personal brand, and instead of just data overload. So you want to identify a few goals and then make sure you focus on this and make sure you're getting the metrics and the data that you need to make sure you're actually having success. And some of the metrics can be, you know, I was at, for example, I was working with one client and he had 55 followers on Twitter. And then I got him to, he's currently at about 6,000 followers. That's one measurement. But it's not the only measurement, and it's not always the most significant measurement as well. You can have 150 really, really engaged people following you, and it can be a lot more meaningful than somebody's got 70,000 followers and nobody is engaging with them. And I'll give you an example. Apple. Apple, we all know Apple, and a lot of people like Apple, and on Facebook, they have like 2.5 million likes, and they haven't posted once, not once. So they have all these people following them and liking their brand, but they're not engaging at all with people on Facebook, which is a real missed opportunity. So sometimes it's more about the quality of who you're following and following you back and engaging than it is about having a whole bunch of followers. So I've mentioned some of these tools already, but tools to help you manage, these are just some of my favorites, but there's so many great tools that it's almost overwhelming. But one of our favorite, my whole team's favorite, is Buffer. Buffer app, it's free, or you can get a paid one. I would start with the free one, use it, see if you love it like we do, and then if you do, you can always go up to the paid versions. And even the paid versions are pretty inexpensive. You have TweetDeck and Hootsuite. You have Clout, and Clout is a way to post and buffer information. It also, Clout is very important in the social media world because it gives people a score on social media. And if you're trying to be a social media influencer, that score can become very important. So Manage Flitter is something that I use to manage my Twitter account. You can follow and unfollow people and see who's chatting and which accounts are dormant and haven't been used in a long time. And there's a lot of really good information from this tool. Once you get a free tool, but you can also get a paid version. I did mention Newbie, which is a tool that I use. That's more for almost a business tool as opposed to a personal one, because they do charge for it. But and the person that I use is steve@newbie.com. So if you're interested in Newbie, please consider going to steve@newbie.com. And you know, he can give you more information, and you can find him on Twitter as well. But it's just one tool, but you don't have to pay to get a lot of this information. And then another really good tool that gives you analytics and also can allow you a lot of different things is Meshfire. So let's talk about accessibility for a few minutes. So when you're dealing with social media accessibility, there's some things that you can do to help a lot with accessibility. And later on, I'm going to talk about what has actually been being done with different platforms. But when you're dealing with social media, you want it as much as possible, keep your language simple. Good design and good content always leads to more accessible content. Try to use plain language. It's helpful if you use the camel case, which is capitalizing the first letters, especially with like compound words and stuff. When possible, limit your abbreviations and acronyms. Sometimes it's really tough to do that, especially when you only have 120 to 140 characters. But it makes things less accessible to people with intellectual disabilities and people, maybe older people or people that English is their second language if we're looking at it from here in the United States. Provide links showing that it's a photo, video, or audio file by, you know, tagging it as a pic, video, or audio. Ensure that your link has accessible content and it's tagged in a way so that people can get to the written transcript or the captioning. Once again, I'd mentioned when I'm posting on Instagram or Pinterest, I take the time in when I'm tagging it to describe what's happening on the picture so that everybody can, you know, can get the information. Every single video that I retweet is not captioned. I'm constantly asking people to consider captioning. You can go now to YouTube, and YouTube has captioning built into it. it's not super great, but it's better than it was. And it's just so important that everything be captioned and transcribed so that we all can have access to the information. But there's still a ton of work to do to make sure that things are accessible. But post pictures out there, but just make sure that you're describing why you posted that particular picture so that everybody can benefit from the information. And then a good resource is DigitalGov has created a pretty extensive social media accessibility toolkit. That provides a bunch of information about making the different platforms accessible, and the different content accessible. So I provided you the link for that. So getting into some of the platforms. So LinkedIn was the first to really be accessible. It was very considered consistently accessible, and it was named the most accessible social media in 2011 by Dennis Bordeaux. He's a global ICT accessibility expert in Canada. But unfortunately, over the last few years, it's actually gotten a lot less accessible and it's lost ground. So it's always a bummer that these tools are accessible and then they stop paying attention to it. So they do have a LinkedIn team that's dedicated towards accessibility, and they're pretty responsive to reported bugs. They have a platform that provides an in-page navigational tool to help keyboard and screen readers navigate long posts and pages. It has real-time notifications for users navigating with keyboards and allows them to do actions like sending message and interacting with dialog boxes and stuff. So the people that are using keyboard only or screen readers still find that LinkedIn's pretty accessible, but they've gotten a pretty bad, a lot of people with intellectual disabilities and people with dyslexia and everything are finding that LinkedIn is becoming less and less accessible. So that's sad, because at the same time, their competitors, like Twitter, are actually becoming more accessible. So Twitter at first was not very accessible, and there were some, I'm going to forget the name of it, Accessible Twitter and Easy Chirp, and there were different tools that were created because Twitter was not accessible. And so that people, for example, that were blind using screen readers could actually participate in Twitter. But Twitter's made a lot of efforts. They also have a dedicated accessibility team. They provide accessibility training to all of their engineers and team members on a regular basis. They're very responsive to accessibility bugs and are constantly providing good releases for those bugs. They have keyboard shortcuts for functionality, which allow you to navigate tweets, log, reply, and retweet. Screen readers sometimes have to turn off their virtual buffers to use the app, but most screen reader users are reporting that Twitter's pretty accessible. It's also accessible on the iPhones, the iPads, on the iOS, and Androids are both accessible. So Twitter's team is doing a pretty good job with this, and then I would say in the last 3 years, they have really, really spent a lot of time to make sure that Twitter was accessible. So we're seeing it pay off. Facebook also has a dedicated team, and they're very responsive to accessibility bugs when they're reported. They have groups where they're talking to users with disabilities and getting feedback from them. They made Facebook Messenger accessible. They also have keyboard shortcuts. And so Facebook, has really gotten a lot more accessible over the last few years, but we still do see some bugs from time to time with Facebook as well. But we're finding that Facebook's pretty accessible for people with disabilities. And when it's not, that they're engaged with many Facebook experts that are people with disabilities, telling them the problems they're having, especially when they go to new versions. G Plus just put out a brand new platform, and so I haven't really looked at it yet. It's pretty accessible. They also have a dedicated accessibility team, and Google's reused a lot of their components, like with Gmail, to provide accessible accessibility support for keyboards and screen readers. The Android app is pretty accessible, but the iOS is still has a lot of accessibility issues, and they're getting a lot of complaints from users with disabilities that are on iPhones and iPads. Google G Plus you know, people are trying to figure out exactly how or if we should use that. And I know Google's really dedicated. I feel that they're dedicated to accessibility, but they still have a lot of work to do on the platform across the board, not just with accessibility, but people are reporting that it's fairly accessible, except for the iOS. A lot of problems there. So I wanted to talk for a few minutes about Access Chat. And I'll tell you why, not just by doing a commercial, but the reason why I think Access Chat is important is last year, as a matter of fact, today is our birthday with Access Chat, but Neil Milken of Atos, who is lives in England, and Antonio Santos, also who works for Atos, and Atos is a multi-billion dollar company, they're a system integrator, but they reached out to me and said, we should start a chat, a Twitter chat, that talks about disability inclusion in an empowering way and accessibility. So we've been doing it for a year, and every week on Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have this tweet chat. And we have it at 3 o'clock here in the United States because we want everybody to join from different time zones. And so we have Europe following, and the UK, and Middle Eastern countries, and Latin America countries. It's more difficult for China, India, and Australia since it's, you know, the time zones. But it's a simple concept. We have a 30-minute interview of a person like Carolyn Gehrig who runs Hospital Glam. And Carolyn is a woman with a significant disability, and she wanted doctors and hospitals and clinics to see her as a person as opposed to just this patient that they're trying, she has a brain tumor, for example. And so she created Hospital Glam, and what they do is she and others take pictures of themselves in different medical situations where they're all glammed out and everything, and to remind medical personnel that they're people. And so it's a powerful, beautiful story. So we interviewed her, and for 30 minutes we captioned the video, we put it out on accesschat.com, and then the next day on Tuesday at 3 o'clock is when we hold them. We have a 60-minute structured question and answer where we talk about how important it is to empower people with disabilities, and we talk about that particular topic. So the website is accesschat.com. It is now the number one Twitter chat in Europe and the UK, and it has become top five globally in the US and all over the world. So people are really joining the conversations, and it's all about disability empowerment, disability inclusion, and accessibility. So yes, I'm talking about this tweet chat, but I love that it's so popular. It's more popular than, quote, mainstream Twitter chat. And so we really are starting to find our voice here in, with all these different social media mediums. And it's really important that we share the empowering stories, the troubling stories, and that we do it from a global perspective. This week we had, last week we featured a woman doing accessibility in Mexico, an organization. The week before, we were in with University del Norte in Colombia. We've interviewed the head of accessibility for BBC. We've done the chief accessibility officer for IBM. We've talked about employability. We do it every single Tuesday. So it's very important to join the conversations. And if you want to be featured on Access Chat, please let me know, and please consider joining Access Chat, because the more that, we do this for free. It's not a company, a marketing company or anything. We just are doing this because we believe the conversation needs to be expanded. So we think it's an important conversation. And it is extremely viral and extremely positive. As of a year ago, well, this is stats even from April to November, that it hit people's speeds 372 million times. So if we had actually been charging for this, if people are paying for advertising, buying a cost per click, we would have, you know, that would have, we would have made $223,000. If we were buying impressions, that equals $372 million. So it's really, really amazing. And the screenshot I have up here is a screenshot from that tool Nuvie that I mentioned. So the reason why I bring it up is please join us. Please create your own chats, your Google feeds. It's just so important that our, you know, one in seven people have disabilities. We're an enormous market. So the more we're on social media and engaged in these conversations, the more powerful these conversations become. So it's, you know, really important to join these conversations. And we'd love to have you join us on Access Chat as a guest or as a participant or both. So that's why I wanted to bring that up. But so when we're, I left time in here for questions, but you know, what are the next steps you should do if you really want to up your game on social media? You know, create a social media strategic plan. Even if you're doing, it can be very informal, but even if you're just doing it for yourself. And I had somebody ask me the other day, they said, Deborah, how in the world did you get 100,000 followers on Twitter? Did you buy followers? And it's in my book, and so I will tell you that I did one time buy some followers. One time about 3 years ago, I paid $70 because I kept getting all this these advertisements. I was curious about it, and I'd read online that it is don't ever do it, you will regret it, but I was curious. So I thought, I'll pay $70 and I'll include whatever happens in my social media book. So I did, and I think I got 1,000 followers maybe. Maybe it was less than that. But what happened was it was interesting to watch what happened. All of a sudden, I started getting all these followers really fast. And so I thought, well, that's cool. But then I started noticing the quality of the followers were really bad. And there was this one gentleman who was very well endowed and had decided in this particular picture not to wear clothing. That was all of a sudden going across my Twitter feed. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm like trying to get it off. Now I'm trying to undo what I accidentally created. And I started having legitimate followers saying, Deborah, I think you've been spammed. So I talk about the experience in my book, but from my experience, you should never, ever, ever buy you know, followers because they're not real followers. And then what happens is, I remember whenever Justin Bieber lost like 3 million followers overnight when Instagram cleaned up their followers, it's because they weren't real. They're fake followers. So I was curious, but it took me weeks to clean that mess up that I had walked accidentally, knowingly into. So you know, understanding you know what you want to achieve. But the reason why I was bringing that up was because I wanted to get active on social media because I felt it was a very powerful, powerful medium for engaging in an empowering conversation. My daughter, born with Down syndrome, she's not broken. She can add value to society. And so all the things that I care about so much, I felt like if I could get a bigger presence and voice out on social media, I could add, I could engage more meaningfully in the conversation. And so I decided, you know, what audience I wanted to target because I wanted to go after people that have people with disabilities in their family or they themselves have a disability or they're a corporation that is including us and they're a nonprofit that cares about us. So I targeted the disability community and accessibility. I joined the conversations. I went out to LinkedIn groups. I went on to Facebook groups. I started chattering using hashtags on Facebook and Twitter. I started doing searches on Instagram and Pinterest. So I really joined the conversations. I joined different chats. I joined groups and conversations. I created a pipeline of content, and I talked a little bit about that before, but I did it through, you know, the Google hashtags, and I did it through, you know, the buffers, and there's all kind of content out there. I searched on hashtags, and I'll give you one example. One time I was searching on Down syndrome hashtag on Twitter, and I noticed that Richard Dawkins was trending, and I thought, that's weird. Why is Richard Dawkins, who is a very well-known atheist, and he's on BBC, and I believe he's a professor at Oxford. Well, he had put out a tweet saying that somebody had asked him what to do if they were pregnant with a baby with Down syndrome, and he said, well, abort it and try again. Well, for some reason, that made me furious for obvious reasons. And so I started chattering. I started saying, you know, my daughter, Sarah Rue, she might not be a talking head or a scientist or a professor at Oxford, but her life matters. And I sent him a picture of my beautiful daughter with Down syndrome in a blue dress, and thousands of other people, families and individuals with Down syndrome started tweeting to this guy. I wound up being the tweet of the week at BBC. My daughter's, her picture got retweeted like thousands of times. I wound up in a 24-hour period, I got 3,000 new followers that cared about my content. And so I did get mad about it, that I just thought that was the most insensitive thing to say, but people say stupid stuff. But it allowed me to start networking with other like-minded people like me that believe that disability doesn't mean you're broken, it just means you might access the computer differently. So, and then once again, share the links to your social media presence repeatedly, all the time. Let people know how to find you on social media. Be consistent on social media in whatever way that works for you. If you're only tweeting once every 2 months, people aren't going to follow you. Do you need to tweet 7 times a day? No. There's even some, you know, suggestions, tweet 3 to 5 times a day, tweet twice on Facebook, post twice on Facebook. But it sort of depends, once again, on what your plan is. Please try to make things accessible. You know, please try to, you know, use people first language, use simple language, tag things. If you're posting pictures, take the time to explain what the pictures are. If you're going to post videos, please caption them. Take the time to make sure we can all benefit from this. And then engage, share, follow, and contribute to the conversation, because these are really, really important conversations. And we are the largest minority group in the world before women. Women beat us. But next, the community of people with disabilities, we're the largest. If we were a country, we would be as large as China. So how we're heard is by powerfully empowering each other on social media. So I left time for questions, and Janet, I don't know how you want to do this, but I did want to leave some time to answer questions. And if we can't get to your question, once again, on the next slide, I'll go ahead and put that up. I have all of my information. I really believe in disability inclusion, and so I will do my best to help you, point you in the right direction, give you guidance. Or somebody on my team will try to, but on all my social media mediums, I'm at Deborah Rue, and here's my other information. But Janet, I'm not sure if I should turn it over to you.
What we'll do, have opened the chat window so everyone can see the questions, and there were a couple of questions sent, which I'll get us started. Otherwise, if you have a question, you can type it in the chat window now. But Carolyn writes in, how do you post ADA-compliant infographics on Facebook?
Oh, that's a really good question, Carolyn. So, if it's on Facebook, the best way to do it, because Facebook doesn't limit you like Twitter does to the amount of characters as much. So explain the same way you would do it on a PowerPoint presentation. Explain the data that I can see on the infographic. So if the infographic is telling me, and we use infographics all the time, we love infographics, but we try to capture the main points, all the main points in the infographic, and we put it in the description. So use the infographics, but just make sure that in the post, because they give you an area that you can, you know, add captioning or add additional information, explain what is happening in the infographic. So if you're explaining that there are more, I'll do like some of those that I was talking about earlier. So Facebook is still growing and expanding, and 72% of the users, they have 72% of all internet users are using them, and you're showing that in a graphical way, just add that content in the captioning part of the post. You and Facebook, if you don't add anything, if you go to post a picture or infographic, Facebook will nag you and say, you should add, you know, a post here. So it wants you to add text. And it, I know that when I use Buffer now, when I go to Buffer something, an article, Facebook comes back and it will say to me, you should add some content here. You should post some content. So tell what's happening in the infographic, and it will be more wordy, but it doesn't matter. We all want to get access to that information, even if I can't see. So infographics can definitely be used, and the information can be caught and provided in a textual way on Facebook. If you do it on Twitter where you don't have as many characters, what I would recommend is providing a link to somewhere where they can go and get that information in a textual way. Say that I've put it out on my website, then hopefully on my website I've taken the time to transcribe what's happening visually on it. So in your Twitter, put down the link to your website and say, for an accessible version of the infographic, go here. So that people know, all right, you ran out of characters, get it, I'm going to go over to your website. And by the way, that's a good branding too, and it'll allow them to get the same information that someone that could see can get. Thank you, Carolyn.
Great. There was another question from Terry, and if Terry is still on, I'm paraphrasing so she can type if I don't get it exactly correctly, but wanted to know what can be done about access to Facebook for people with visual impairment, and what about compliance issues with that?
Well, Carrie, as I was saying, you know, we're finding that a lot of people with disabilities, including visual and you know, people that are blind, are finding that Facebook is becoming more and more accessible to them. And if for some reason they're having accessibility problems, they can go up to the help part of Facebook, and they can actually communicate with Facebook and tell them the problems that you're having. They're working really hard to make sure that people with all disabilities, but people specifically using screen readers and keyboards, that they can have full access. So there's a lot of efforts being made. So if you're having a problem, please let Facebook know, because they're really trying to solve all the problems. And many people with disabilities, especially technologists using screen readers and stuff, are finding that it's becoming more and more accessible. So that is the time to interact with Facebook and tell them the problems that you're experiencing. And what I'm hearing is that they're pretty responsive to those kind of questions.
Okay, I saw a question from Justin, and the question is, where do you find the shortcut key commands in social media?
And there's a couple of different ways that you can do it, and I thought about including them, but I was afraid I had too many slides. But you can go to those social media mediums, and you can type in the help, and they'll provide it, or you can actually just do a search on Google, and you can get the information too. They're very easy to find. So just go in and type in, you know, Facebook shortcut keys, and you'll get the information. It's very readily available. And if for some reason, Justin, you have any problems, just send me an email. We'll grab the information. Or if anybody has problems, you know, we're happy to grab that information. But it's very readily available out on the different platforms and out on the internet as well.
Okay, this doesn't really look like a question, but I wanted to share a comment from Gary. He says, Facebook, like most companies, is really only working to ensure that blind, visual impaired persons have access. Like Google, they are ignoring those of us who use speech recognition software or have dexterity impairments. It is not becoming better. I don't know if you wanted to address that.
Well, I do want to address it because I agree. I think that what's happened is most of the focus is being focused on the screen readers and the keyboards. And I am part of a W3C working group where we're actually trying to address standards for people with cognitive and intellectual disabilities. And so people that have dyslexia, for example, as well as, you know, people with Down syndrome or autism or things like that. How do we make sure the internet and social media is fully accessible to them, and how do we guide the engineers that are building these platforms so that they are more accessible? So we know this is still, this is definitely a problem. And what we have to do is what we have been doing all along, is that we have to make sure that when you're seeing these problems with the text-to-speech and the speech-to-text problems, make sure that you're complaining about it. And I mean that really respectfully, but be heard. So if you're having problems with these tools, make sure you're chattering about it, you're going out on the help desk and telling them about it, and that you're being heard. Because right now, the people that are screaming the loudest are actually the community of people that are blind, using screen readers. They have made such a stink about not being included that now all of these different social media platforms are working really hard to make sure that the screen reader users and the keyboard users can actually get access to their information. So we still have a lot of work to do. Things are still very inaccessible in ways that it shouldn't be at this time and age, but it's still a problem. But the way to do it is join the conversations out there. There are groups out on social media and Facebook and LinkedIn that are really raising Cain about this. And so join those conversations and be heard, and actually go out to the help desk. One thing that I've done before multiple times is I will say, if I have a problem that I want to be resolved, I will go out on social media and I will say, and I try to be positive in my complaint, but I will say, I really wish my text-to-speech engine would work out on Facebook, at Facebook, for example. It's amazing the kind of response you'll start getting for that. You know, and you got to do it in a positive, informational way, but there's a lot of different things that you can do to have your voice heard so that that particular part of the disability community will not be ignored. Because right now, we know there's still a lot of problems with that, and also problems with cognitive and intellectual disabilities out on the internet and social media as well.
Thank you. That was a good discussion. Rachel says, Tumblr could be a great way to reach some populations, and it's big on sharing content, but it's also very image and video heavy and not often accessible. Any ideas or suggestions?
Well, I agree with what you're saying, and I also use Tumblr, and I really like Tumblr, but it's sort of the same thing. Tumblr, and I don't know, I know that Tumblr spent some efforts to be accessible, but all of the mediums are saying, you know, videos, I've read statistics before about how many videos get posted every second. It's something ridiculous. And so what we have to keep doing is educating everybody about why videos and, you know, have to be captioned and transcribed, and, you know, why, who you're leaving out when you don't make them accessible. And if, once again, you've taken the time to make a video and post it out on Tumblr, you know, wouldn't it be great if, you know, 46% more of people could actually enjoy it? And even people that don't need captioning, like myself, I get more value out of a video that's captioned than videos that aren't captioned. And so I think we have to continue to educate. And same thing, I would say the same thing about Tumblr that I said about Facebook or Twitter. If you find accessibility issues, tell them, and then tell them again, and then tell them again. And if they don't have, like, groups set up, ask them if they have accessibility groups. Do they have a team that you can talk to? Do they have groups of users that are addressing this? And if not, tell them to create one. And then be really vocal, not only on Tumblr, but on other social media mediums, saying, I really wish Tumblr, you know, had a tool so that when I posted a video, I could actually make it, you know, captioned. So it's about really continuing to fight the fight. You know, we've still got so much work to do.
Carolyn says, is there a one-stop online guide to ADA compliance and social media?
Not that I know of, Carolyn. I know that some things have been created, but not a lot. Whenever Janet asked me to do this presentation, I've done a similar presentation for for the Great Lakes ADA, but it was like in 2013. And I thought, I can't put a tired presentation up here. I really need to make this a little bit more relevant to 2015, almost 2016. So I went out and I searched SlideShare and I searched all over the internet. And there is really still not very much information out there about social media and accessibility. I mean, there's just a handful of information out there. And even trying to decide what I was going to talk about today, I knew that we wanted to talk about social media and disability inclusion and accessibility, but the data that's out there is still, somebody needs to create that. I think if somebody actually created that that ADA, tool like that, a lot of people would want to buy it. So, but not that I know of. And if you find something out there like that, then I would love for y'all to share it with me so I can help spread the word, because I would put it out on my social media.
Great. Rosemary shares that Facebook does have an accessibility page, and Gary has shared a couple of links on digital.gov resources on social media, as well as Queens SU accessibility how-to information on social media accessibility. So those are some resources being shared in the chat.
Oh, good, good. And I know that there's been some really good information that's come out of Australia. Some of it's gotten a little dated, but they've done some very interesting research studies out of Australia that has talked about social media. And I would have to say thanks to Rosemary, one of my colleagues, for joining today. I think the best thing that we all can do is when we find good information, share it with each other so that we can continue to broaden the conversation. And anybody that wants me to share good information on our social media channels, please let me know, because we're always looking for good content and good ideas to really encourage these companies to make their websites accessible, make their social media and all of their marketing accessible and inclusive to us. But we'd love for you to share with us.
Great. We have a few more minutes. I'm wondering if there are any more questions. I'll give people a second to type in the chat window with any final questions for Deborah.
And I did forget to share my video, so I'll just say hello to everybody real quick. So Janet asked me to do it at the beginning, and I forgot.
Okay, I don't see any final questions coming through. So I think we will conclude the session. Deborah does have her contact information up there. And of course, you can always contact the Great Lakes ADA Center, and we will try to work with Deborah and other experts to get your questions answered. Take time to fill out our evaluation form. We are planning right now for our 2016 Accessible Technology Webinar Series. The next session will be January 21st of the new year, and that will be on creating accessible forums. Once again, Deborah, thank you for a great presentation, and thank you to our virtual audience for their fantastic questions and attention on this topic. And that concludes our session. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Janet. Thanks, everybody.